This is the Catch Up on Hit. With
Flick and Tim. So here we are. We're in a hotel room in Bondi on Mother's Day. And
sounds so seedy.
Just three men celebrating Mother's Day
together.
my uncle Ben Lee. I always think it's funny when I get to talk to you for work. So hey,
yeah, hey, how are you?
And Josh Radner. Hey,
not your relation. No relation.
No. Yeah. So you guys are a band now, which is awesome. How did it all come about?
Well, our friendship came first, and like you met Josh, you know, 10 years ago at our wedding. So we've been friends for a long time. And then, you know how it is when you're a creative person, it's just you test the waters with collaborations, you're interested in different combinations. And it just sort of very quickly took on a life of its own. But I still think we're sort of, really our priority is kind of our friendship and honouring that that's healthy and good and fun and then kind of making music from that.
But certainly we're better friends now than we were 3 years ago when we started this. And we were pretty good friends to begin with. It's just
that's good that you're better. It would be bad if you were worse friends.
Yeah, yeah. And we do monitor it. I mean, we don't let things fester. I mean, one of the things we always joke about is like we're not like teenagers rocking out in a garage who have no communication skills. Like we actually have communication skills and we don't let things, you know, backlog. Like if something needs to be said, it's said. We just handle things like adults. And that helps us, I think.
So, Josh, your background is in acting. What was it like the first time that you guys got up and performed in front of people? Where was it? What was that night like?
It was at this really great singer-songwriter venue in LA called the Hotel Cafe. We've played there more than any other place, actually. They've been great to us. And, I mean, there was a... like, I've been in front of people for so much of my life. I've spoken into microphones. I'm comfortable on some level with that aspect of it. So some of the credits transferred, you know, from my other career, and some of them did not. I mean, it was just enough newness and just enough freaky, you know, it scared me enough that it was super exciting and thrilling and terrifying. And, you know, I remember the first show, Ben looked over at me. He's like, "Can you believe we're doing this?" Like there was such a kick even for him, I think, and he'd been doing it for so long, but like, It's continued to feel new, and every step of the way, you know, we had this really transformative kind of mini tour to Brazil and Argentina in January, and that really shifted us too. So we've never settled into a comfortable, safe groove. It feels like we keep moving and freaking ourselves out a little bit more, and it just keeps it like Ben said, it's taking on a life of its own. It's really fun.
I also, just one other thing about like performing music, you know, it's a bit different to like theatre and things like that, I think, or even like, say, orchestral music where everything's really planned out. There's a sense of like, for me, like playing, you know, rock and roll music or pop, whatever you call it, like where you're up on stage, if you're really doing it, where it's almost like a boxing match or something. Like
who are you boxing? It's the audience? Or
yourself, the people you're on stage with, the audience, but there's like, you're in a tussle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's got a real, like, there's winners and there's losers. Like, in a sense that the artist has to try and kind of like, just sort of like grapple with the room and win. And like almost dominate them in a way. When it's done well, the audience, the person on stage comes out sort of victorious, and the audience is happy about it. They're like, "Hey man, they kicked our ass."
We did it.
Even they say that. They say like, "How was the band?" "Oh man, they kicked ass."
Yeah.
Who's ass? Your own ass. They kicked the audience. You're celebrating the band kicking your ass as an audience. And it's like you want them to kind of win. And so there's this sense of this battle thing that I think, when you start playing a lot and you get into it, it's like very psychological and really fun, you know?
That's cool. And actually, I've got some friends who do a stand-up comedy show called Comedy Boxing, where they both do stand-up and they wear boxing gloves and are allowed to punch each other.
Oh, that's crazy. During,
which is like the next level of that. So if you ever get a chance to see that.
We're not going to take it.
You could steal their idea. I love the idea that you guys are, it's like a cross-artistic platform collaboration. So obviously from the music world and from the world of acting, if we were to add a third band member from anywhere in the arts or from anywhere, just from anywhere, who would you add if it was Radner, Lee, and...
Whoever's like the best at dressage.
Dressage?
Yeah, you know, that's when you're on horses and you get them to do tricks.
And they do this, like, skipping.
So you're asking, like, if we're Crosby, Stills, and Nash, like, who's our Neil Young?
Yeah, that's an older reference than I'm...
Oh, really? That doesn't land on you?
No. I don't know. Rings a bell. Oh, who's your Neil Young? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, who's our Neil Young? I don't know, Ben. Who do you think?
Who could get into the mix with us? Well, honestly, like, one of the things... This is probably taking a more earnest approach to the ads, but anytime we get a female vocally or something in the mix, it actually works well, because at the end of the day, it is we're two like white Jewish guys standing on stage with acoustic guitars, and you do kind of like mixing that up is always good. But I don't know, or maybe a rapper,
Mona, our drummer friend Mona, who's amazing. We're gonna play with her a bit more.
A rapper,
yeah, maybe.
If you could have a rapper, who would you have? You can choose anyone. Would you have Kanye on stage with you?
I don't know if I could handle. I don't know if we have enough. You'd have
speaking of boxing gloves.
We need too many things.
All right, thanks so much. So you guys are going to be performing in Melbourne.
Yeah, we're at the Athenaeum on Saturday on the 19th. Come along. It's really good. Our show is really. We're getting really good.
They're fun. It's not like it's a very alive event. Like there's no two shows are like we're. We really deal with the fact that there's people in the room with us in that moment. We have a mistakes permissible policy, so it's fun to watch us kind of... Well, we don't stumble that much, but we it's allowed. We're not perfectionists.
But we still try and win.
Yeah.
We will beat you into submission.
At least come for the boxing.
Yeah.
This is one of those straight to the pool room moments. The Victorian government has announced, the Minister for Public Transport, Jacinta Allan, Bendigo's own, has said that they are looking to retire some trams to Victorians that want a piece of history.
They're giving them away?
Literal trams. So there's a huge fleet of trams across Victoria, and particularly in Melbourne, and there's a bunch they don't use anymore, and they're just taking up a lot of space. So they're looking at rehousing and retiring, it's quite nice language, 134 Victorian trams. And you can...
And they're giving them to normal people.
Yes, you can pitch to the government and say what you'd want to do with a tram, right? Say, I'd love to have a tram because... Now, there's a few rules.
You'll need a good pitch.
There's a few rules. You can't actually... They can never go back on the tracks. You can never use them for transport again because, you know, they've been retired for a reason, guys. And they'd like to see them in bigger places where people can access them again. But you can, effectively, if you've got an idea, pitch it to the Victorian government. And say, I want a tram.
Now, I've got a couple of ideas. Do you? This is getting... Yeah. Should we have a brainstorming session? Okay.
What have you got?
Okay. Well, look, it's very cool lately to have those shipping container pools.
Nice.
I reckon. Take the top of a tram, fill it up with water. Seal it.
Would you see you the tram, though? Or would it be above ground?
It's above ground.
That's cool.
You just got a tram in your backyard. Maybe you can heat it, have a little tram koozie.
Yeah, that photo of the guy on Tinder in Bendigo that's floating around of him and his mates in the back of the ute with the tarpaulin.
Exactly.
Just as classy. I think that, look, I'm going to go serious. I'm going to say, you know, there's a housing crisis and there's a fair bit of homelessness in central Victoria. Why not have it as a shelter for those going tough in perhaps a park or perhaps a public space in Victoria? I think that's a good one.
It is a good idea. Unfortunately, way less exciting than getting it, putting it in the back of your place and just kitting it out with all of your cool stuff, with your hunting stuff, with your PS4. Get yourself a tram cave.
Tram cave. Tram cave. That is a classy number. That's a classy one.
I think that would be very, very fun.
Okay, well, you're going to love mine, though.
What have you got?
Because I think I got the one. I got the ticket. Okay, so nothing spells profit like tricking tourists, right?
Yeah.
So what you do is you get the tram, you deck it out, you put a driver in. You know, Tim's up the front with a hat on. He's playing the driver.
Hey, I'm the driver. Yeah. Welcome to the tram.
TV screens at all the windows. You trick people.
Oh, it's a ride.
Yeah, it's a ride. Yeah. But you tell them that they're going through, you know, a Bendigo.
And then you've got your mate Trent who just kind of stands on the side and rocks the tram gently.
Makes car noises and maybe, I don't know, just to tell him, might not go for it. It doesn't seem legit, but it would definitely, you know, turn a pretty profit.
Hashtag profit.
Yeah.
I like the idea.
Talk on Heat. We have the technology.
Chatting now with Alex Elios from The Big Smoke. Alex, emojis are hard enough to read in day-to-day life. And now the court system is having trouble interpreting them. What is going on?
So one of the problems that's happening with emojis is the whole concept around intent. So if you send an emoji to someone that you mean to be quite funny or lighthearted, but they take it as a threat or as a menacing message. That's really up for interpretation, and courts around the world have started to have to use emojis as part of the communication that they have to analyse. And there was a court case actually in New Zealand where somebody was using the plane emoji to send to an ex, and she took that as in a threat that he was going to come and visit her.
Oh, because he was going to get on a plane.
Yeah, so there was that whole incident of, well, do we take an emoji as serious communication, or do we take it as a lighthearted image? And that's where courts are a little bit, they're split on this, because on one hand, you know, people do communicate via emoji in a very serious way, because a lot of people even do whole sentences using it made up of emojis.
100%. And this is actually quite a serious and broader topic, because obviously a younger generation have really just now hammered home how important it is to be nice on social media. And this is one way that people are not being nice and can really damage some young minds.
Absolutely. And so in France, for example, there was also another case where a man was using menacing emojis, angry face emojis, to make another person feel uncomfortable in the workplace. And that was deemed a threat.
So what happens if in the court, are they reading out these text messages saying angry face emoji with steam coming out of ears, eggplant emoji.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Yeah, like how do they read it out?
Well, that's kind of the way they do it. I mean, they don't say it like that, but they do say the emoji that you use expressed and conveyed this emotion. And that, by conveying that emotion, you're making the other person feel uncomfortable, unsafe, unwanted, whatever the feeling may be. And so they're really able to determine whether or not somebody is using an emoji in a lighthearted way or not. And usually they're not. And they're intentionally trying to upset the other person.
I know that one day there will be a linguistics essay on emojis. It's just got to be a matter of time till someone does their thesis on emojis. Absolutely. In linguistics.
Yeah, it should be an English class now.
Yes.
It's cool. It back. I finally made it back. I took the Monday off. I was supposed to have Monday off. I was very close to not making it into the studio this morning, though.
Wow.
Because
a journey, was it?
It was quite a journey that I went on to make it here. So, first, I'm flying home yesterday afternoon. I've got a 3 o'clock flight.
Okay, so you get there a bit earlier.
I arrive at the airport and... sorry.
It's so emotional.
Yeah, I'm tearing up. Arrive at the airport an hour early. They send me a text. They send me a text and it says, your flight has been delayed by 90 minutes. And they send that about 45 minutes before the flight. So I'm already stuck. I'm already at the airport.
Bad start, but it surely gets better.
Bad start. So anyway, finally, I kill the time. I kill the 90 minutes. I'm hanging around at the airport by book. Get onto the plane. Then, once we're all sitting on the plane is then delayed another 30 minutes, Flick. We're all just sitting there on the plane, nothing's happening. Now, this is pretty standard. Eventually.
I'm sorry, the pilot has to finish his words with friends, with his mother.
Eventually, they fire up the engines and the plane starts to move towards the runway. Finally, I'm thinking, great, we're 2 hours behind schedule, but it's okay, we're finally going to be taking off. Then, some good Samaritan sitting 3 rows in front of me notices that an elderly gentleman sitting near to him is not looking particularly well.
Ugh.
And so they call over a flight attendant who comes over. The flight attendant comes, checks on the old man. The old man says, no, I'm fine. I should
he's
be fine.
Not fine. Poor guy. He's trying to be a trooper for you, Tim.
He's trying to be a trooper. Flight attendant makes a call. Nah, you're not fine. So we turn the plane around and we go all the way back to the terminal where they then... we then have to wait and they get medical staff to come onto the plane. This is going on and on. We're now 2.5 hours in. Then the medical staff come onto the plane. They check the old man. The old man says, no, I'm fine. The medical staff say, no, you're not fine. We're taking you off the plane. They take him off the plane. I think they should have taken the young guy off who dobbed him in the first place.
Both
as well.
Both of them all off.
Get everybody off the plane. Why don't you? Anyone that was involved in the ruckus. Get him out of here.
So he's off the plane. You can go now, right?
We're sitting there. We've got to wait again for us to be able to go. They go... all right, again, the captain comes over the loudspeaker. He says, all right, now we've taken the old gentleman off the plane. We've only just realised, though, he's actually got a bag that's under the plane. Now we need to unpack the hole underneath of the plane.
Damn it, Graham!
It's getting worse and
couldn't
worse.
Couldn't just take carry-on?
We're up to about 3 hours.
I hope he's okay.
Now.
I am concerned about his welfare, but you've been on this tarmac
he's
for a long
fine.
Time.
He's fine.
What happened?
Finally. They sort out. You can see out the window. They're doing the bags. They're taking the bags off. They put the bags
We've
back on.
We've got his bag.
We've
you
got
guys
it.
Go.
Then, finally, they've sorted out all of this. And then they say over the loudspeaker, okay, we're now going to be able to take off very soon. We now just need to do a head count.
Shut up,
to check who is on the plane.
We're all here minus Graham.
I think, Flick,
that we were literally on the plane for so long. People had given birth in some areas of the plane. People had passed away. There was a new generation of people on the plane finally making the journey to come to Melbourne, to come to Bendigo. Families were created.
Yep.
Families broke up. It was
new civil wars, new religions were birthed on that plane as well.
I don't know what I missed out on.
Who is this Tim we got back after such a long 3 hours on the tarmac?
I've been through a lot.
Clearly.
Weird news battles on Hit. Let the battle round begin.
Who doesn't have a little debt? I mean, it's not aspirational to have debt, but people can, you know, have debt their whole lives.
If you went to uni, you got debt.
You've got instant debt.
If you've got a house, like one of those
fancy pants people that pays as they go. Ooh.
Look at you. You got your life together.
In Russia, they're dealing with debt in a different way. There's a utility company that has had payments ignored by a client that they've not paid for their water bill. It's about $810 US, approximately,
right? We're talking about a huge amount.
Oh, it doesn't seem huge, does
it? That's probably a lot in Russia. What is that in rubles? Do you know?
50,000 ruble.
Yeah, okay.
He has not paid it. And they've even tried reaching him and they tried calling him. They've sent it in written notifications, sent people over there. But in the town of Zubkaninovka, in Russia, they have resorted to dealing with this man by putting a shame pyramid at the front of his house. 3-ton, 1.5 meter tall concrete pyramid plastered with shameful slogans like, you know, debt man, you owe money, this guy, he owes us 50,000 ruble, because he owes the money. I think that's quite innovative. It's very, like, prehistoric.
Yeah.
That's something from biblical times, you know?
But then again, not hard to get around. Like, if you put a shame pyramid in my front yard, I'm going to spend the morning, I'm going to paint it, and then I'm going to start charging admission to come and see my ancient Egyptian exhibition.